morning, everybody. Welcome to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 16th of November. Very nice to have you with us. And it's a delight to have you all here. You guys are going to have to... There you go. Yeah.
We have to look like real radio people today.
Yeah, so just letting the panelists know that they should put on their earmuffs. Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. Let me introduce our group to you. A reminder, you can join us at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'll be going to the Great Barrington Rotary today to give them some idea about why I think the election results return that way. Always good food and always fun.
Excellent. We'll have a great time.
Will do.
All right. We also welcome Director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Hello. Can I make a small plug, too?
Absolutely.
The old Paco Gallery on Friday,
yes,
starting at 6:30, is having this thing called Pecha Kuka. It's a Japanese idea, and there are a number of people. I get to be one of them this time. And you put up 20 slides. You have 20 seconds to talk about it, and that forms your presentation. Mine will be on the state of women.
Oh, neat. Well, that's great.
Post-election.
So it's a, and then it will, and then, so that's the exhibit, right? Then,
yeah.
then it dies,
yeah,
and moves on. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Congratulations. Chris Churchill is a Times Union columnist. What have you got going on?
Nothing.
Okay. Just the column. Got the column. Yep.
Got
yep.
That.
That's good.
Yep.
That's always good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good morning. Welcome. A reminder, panel@wamc.org is the new web address. Use that one. The old email address is for inquiries about the show, but this is for the actual panel. So if you want to get to us and you want to be have your letter read, you got to go to panel@wamc.org.
Hey Joe, just one second, and I did want to compliment Chris on a wonderful column that you wrote about the concept of Andrew Cuomo running for president of the United States. And the headline was terrific. So, you know, every once in a while, we all try to compliment each other when we get it right, and you sure got it right in that column.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
What was the headline?
Something like Andrew Cuomo in 2020, oh, please. You know, the police.
It was sort of extended. Out. Yeah.
Oh, please.
All right. Well,
or you could pronounce that. Or you could pronounce that police.
Yeah.
It's well, there's all kinds of interesting scenarios brewing, right? There's we can it's endless what we can think of in this election. But let's get to some of it. First of all, so this is from what I understand that so far a week after the election, it's Wednesday. We knew the results very early. A week ago, very early in the morning, a week ago, and in that time, there have been no appointments made. Four appointments, I guess, were made, but none to the cabinet. But meanwhile, there have also been four firings. So that's sort of where we are right now. Key figures being purged from the Trump transition team, and meanwhile, we are being told from Donald Trump via Twitter, at an undisclosed restaurant in Manhattan, that everything's fine, that we are, everything's under control, it's organized, it's all good, and we should look at this as a positive sign.
You know, back in the day, Joe Stalin. Joseph Stalin, or Stalin, as we like to say around here, would purge. There would be purges coming all the time, and people never knew when the purge was coming. But there would be, based on a suspect that these people were not good for the great leader, and I said that sarcastically, unless in case somebody's at their keyboard right now. And this reminded me of that. And what we are hearing is that it was Chris Christie and everybody associated with Chris Christie, all his people who got purged from the transition team. Out with you, off with your heads.
Right.
And what I'm worried about here is that what we're not doing is seeing somebody saying, okay, you can be a loyalist, but you also have to know what you're doing. Rudy Giuliani is pushing himself as Secretary of State now. It looks like he's in big trouble. But he doesn't. He's never done anything really in foreign policy other than to feather his own nest with foreign interests and to represent them. And it creates all kinds of problems for him. So that's what I'm thinking.
You know, the Giuliani story is interesting because he took himself out of the running for a lot of people have taken themselves out of the running for a lot of different things. We saw this with Ben Carson yesterday. We saw this.
That's right.
Giuliani said, I don't want to be attorney general. I don't want to be attorney general, but he is very interested in being Secretary of State. As Alan mentioned, now he's facing a flood of questions about whether his business dealings should disqualify him from being named Secretary of State. And because he had a very lucrative 15 years in the private sector, and is that a credential for the job? Or is that a detriment?
I don't think there are credentials for any of these jobs. We have a president who has no experience and multiple conflicts of interest. That did not stop him. So why should Rudy Giuliani, who has extreme loyalty to Trump, which is highly valued by the Trump administration, why should that stop him, he thinks?
But Trump did campaign on this whole idea that Hillary had been tainted by all the money she accepted from foreign countries. So it would be pretty ridiculous for him to turn around and hand the job to a man who has all those same issues, right?
Oh, my. You think it would be hypocritical and ridiculous? Oh, my.
Yeah.
Shock.
Well, you know.
That's sarcasm, I can't tell.
I agree with you. I couldn't quite get that either. I think, Rosemary, you were being sarcastic, right?
Quite.
Yes, quite. Yeah.
Yes. Got it. Okay. So let me just say that I said on my morning commentary, because I think it's very important, that I would rather have, and this is, I would rather have Giuliani as Secretary of State than I would as the chief officer of our Justice Department, simply because I think the second is much more frightening with a guy like that being in charge of the Get Even Squad than being Secretary of State, which I think is, and I'm not being sarcastic, I'm just being outright, it's just a terrible choice.
I think he may want it because he does have this odd competitive thing with Hillary Clinton and would like to show that he was better at it. I really think that's part of it. And who knows what's really going on? I think that Ben Carson leaving was more surprising to me than that Rudy Giuliani wanted an inappropriate job. Why did he drop out? Is it because of what happened to Christie? Is it because...
Well, you know, his statement I thought was really interesting.
Yeah,
and maybe it's true, which was, I don't feel I'm qualified.
I know, that shocked me. Perhaps that's it.
Like, and maybe that's really the truth. Like, I don't feel I'm qualified. Oh. And like, maybe he actually has a conscience and says, I don't think I'm qualified for the job.
I did have that thought.
Although, even though he did think he was qualified to be president, but that's another story.
It's a nice bit of humility, I guess.
Okay, but it... But I'm having a problem here in that I don't know what the job he disqualified himself for.
Education.
Could you catch us all up on
education.
That?
Education.
Health and Human Services.
And
Health and
Human Services. Yeah. Right.
I mean, Health and Human Services, given that he's a neurosurgeon, so that made sense. And then and education, which is a department that they're looking to severely gut. But yeah, he backed away from really and just said, I'm not interested in being, I want to help from the outside, not from the inside.
I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it made it kind of clear that he never really thought that he had much of a chance to actually be elected president, perhaps.
Yes.
You know, it was just kind of something he did to kind of
get attention to
right,
his ideas.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, it worked for
Wouldn't
one.
And it did work.
Yeah.
Okay, the other interesting thing about the fight is that Jared Kushner has emerged as such a power behind the throne.
Yep.
I mean, what are his qualifications? I know he has a newspaper, but that comes by dint of his wealth that he could buy it. So what are his qualifications that he now has the ear of the president and has ousted Christie, who, despite his faults, all the stuff with Bridgegate and all that, is an experienced administrator? What did he do to oust him?
Mm. Well, we know.
Well, I know the reason. I know the reason, Alan. But why is Trump listening?
Well, and a complete purge.
Yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
Mean,
not
I mean,
just
that's
a,
not, not just like get rid of the guy, but get rid of any fingerprints that he was in the building.
Yeah.
Which I think is
interesting. There's one other thing that I'm considering here, as each of these guys disqualify themselves. You know, it is. In each case, here, Giuliani says, okay, I don't want to be attorney general. So that raises questions to all of us, right? That we don't know why that happened. It wasn't just happenstance. There's got to be a reason in each case that somebody said, I don't want to go through confirmation on that one, or I may have done something that people need to know about, or I'm a little bit worried. So I'm talking about what we don't know.
Right, and we don't know, and we don't really know why Chris Christie was purged either. I mean, it could be that they decided that he was trying to build his own little empire within the administration. I mean, Chris Christie has shown time and time again that he's kind of all about Chris Christie and not about the person he's supposed to be supporting. Right?
But I guess why now, though? I mean, he was such a part of the campaign.
He was so servile for so long.
Yeah, so it seemed if there were major clashes and that there was bad blood between the two, that it would have surfaced before the guy got hired.
I don't think there was bad blood between Trump and
Kushner.
Between Kushner and
yeah, but he was
laying in wait. Christie was in the position of putting together the team if we win, and they didn't think they were going to win.
No one thought they did anything.
So it was a powerless position. Then suddenly it becomes major position, and that's when Kushner goes,
that's
okay,
a good point. Yeah.
Here's have a cold dish of my revenge, please.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
It does make more sense to have Pence in charge of that, though.
It does, yeah. I didn't think anything of it when I heard that Pence was going to. But that was before we knew that that Christie wasn't just pushed into a position under chairman. He was out, and so was everyone who had ever said a kind word about him.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a couple of other things here. We do know Bridgegate isn't quite over yet. And we do know that Christie has been named by several witnesses in the Bridgegate trial. So maybe the U.S. attorney there is sharpening his pencil again. Is that possible? And that they know it and that they have to stay away from him? That may be the reason?
That is possible. It's certainly possible.
I don't know. Don't you think they would have acted already? The information that came from those witnesses on the stand was known to the prosecutors before they got on the stand.
I think if there's one thing that can be said about the federal prosecutors, unlike the FBI guys, Comey, is that things were on hold until after the election. So, for example, in the Andrew Cuomo case, in which two of his closest colleagues are being accused of stealing, or three of them. It was clear to me that that there was going to be no movement till after the election, and now I think it's going to happen like thunder, to be honest with you. And I think that may be the case with New Jersey prosecutors too.
Well, and of course the thing that we're getting a lot of letters on, but that we've talked about many times on the show, and we haven't brought it up this morning, so people think we don't know, which is that that Chris Christie prosecuted Jared Kushner's father, and put him in jail, and it was quite it was not just putting him in jail, but there was quite a humiliation that went along with that. So, I mean, that certainly gives you an idea into the bad blood. Going back to my earlier question then it's surprising that given Kushner's place in the campaign from the very beginning, a very strong role in having the ear of his father-in-law, that Christie would even get as close as he did.
But they needed, at the time that Christie endorsed Trump, they needed him so badly. I mean,
they needed somebody from one of the Republican
right. They needed somebody to give him some sort of legitimacy and to back him. I mean, they at that point, I don't think they had hardly anybody else except for Giuliani.
Mm-hmm. Boy, he must feel as even worse than I do, even worse than the Hillary supporters. Christie has just lost the race. Loss, then subjugates himself, then loses that place, and the Bridgegate went against him. He has had a really bad couple of months.
Couldn't happen to a better guy.
Yeah. Can you? Can I ask this question? So, are we in the media being unfair?
Oh.
In the sense, or do you think? I mean, because I just keep seeing these headlines about the transition being in a shambles and frozen, and there's nothing is moving, and it's have we seen this in the past? Is that a fair statement, or is it just look, you have, it's only been a week, And are we not, should we have just a little more patience while every duck gets in the row?
Yeah, we probably should. I mean, we have to remember they didn't expect to win. So they were not as lined up with everything ready to go as some other campaigns might have been. But, you know, the Trump campaign was kind of unusually chaotic all the way through. I don't know why this would surprise anybody if the transition team is a little chaotic, too.
Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
I like to think of Dick Nixon and Eisenhower. That's one of the nice things about being old. You know, Eisenhower was not much of a politician either. And the whole idea about putting Nixon in there was to run the Republican establishment and to do a lot of the same kind of work. And I think that that is what is going on here with Pence now.
I think that what you're watching, what you're seeing is Kremlin watching, that there is no cooperation right now with the press. The Trump administration has promised this is coming. They're getting their act together. But he, like, snuck out on the Secret Service and the press pool. Not the Secret Service, I'm sorry. The press pool yesterday to go to a restaurant. And this is the same thing. There's nobody saying to the press, except for Twitter, except for late-night Twitters from the president-elect, that this is what we're doing. It's a little chaotic. We're getting our act together, but here's what we're thinking. No one's saying that. So the press is sitting there looking at all the signs. It's Kremlin watching.
So, I mean, the incident you're talking about last night was they put a lid. The communications team, Hope Hicks, came down and said, we're putting a lid on. No movement. We're done for the day. And everybody went home, and then Trump left and went to the 21 Club for a steak dinner. And there wasn't that. And traditionally, there's always been at least one member of a pool, if not more, that would be part of following a president or a president-elect.
Yeah, the death watch.
Yeah.
In case anything happened, there'd be somebody there. But, you know, he's doing it in the middle of New York City. There's lots of people, and I bet the press would find out about it.
Well,
so
apparently,
I don't care.
If the stories that have come out is the maitre d' called members of the press and the press, and they gave them reservations, and then they came into the restaurant. So that was sort of how it was covered, ultimately, and they had pictures and so forth. But let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll go to other topics. We'll go to some letters and much more. It's our roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 16th of November. We have Alan Chartok with us, Rosemary Armeo, and Chris Churchill. And, of course, we welcome your letters. It's panel, P-A-N-E-L, panel at WAMC.org. And, again, we'll look forward to going through those letters and many other comments when we come back after this short break from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok and Rosemary Armeo and Chris Churchill with us. And, of course, your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. A couple letters, and then we'll go on to some other things here. David in Amherst writes, I think it's frightening that Frank Gaffney, a conspiracy theorist that is too far right for the Washington Times, is on the transition team and headed into the administration. Do we know that he's headed into the administration?
He's being talked about, but as a member of the team. He's going to vet other people. I don't know if he himself is up for a position. He hates Muslims.
Barbara writes, great way to start the day. Why can't the Electoral College change its vote? Seems like in this case, it is the majority opinion based on the popular vote. Alan, probably more than anything else, we've been getting letters like this.
I think there is a sense of great frustration among so many of us that this thing has to be undone. And somebody came up with the idea that all of a sudden the Electoral College, who are, after all, appointed as delegates by the very people who picked Trump, would turn around and say, okay, we've had a spate of conscience here, and we're going to really vote for someone else. Ain't going to happen. Write it down. Ain't going to happen.
And when you say appointed, I mean, these are usually high-level people, right? These are congressional leaders.
Absolutely. These are donors and donors and people like that. Absolutely right. That's right. There's obviously one for every, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that also apparently there was they're going back to Dianne Feinstein has been on this for a long time of calls to abolish the Electoral College, and apparently she's been put back into action to work on that. But
I don't like the Electoral College. I was in favor of banning it long ago, but I think Donald Trump is right. Had this been an election without the Electoral College, he would have run a different way, and he might just as well have won. He might have won by a larger vote, in fact.
Right. You can't change it. I mean, no. Everyone goes into the campaign knowing what the rules are,
exactly.
and they campaign accordingly. So,
and I said that all through the primary, you know, about Bernie. Like, if he didn't want to play by the rules, tough, and that's why Hillary won. So I can't change my mind now. He played by the rules, and the rules are an Electoral College, and he won. It is tempting to think about, wow, there's been so many twists and turns in this election. Wouldn't it be amazing if that happened,
it
too?
It could.
But
I think the only way it could is if something came out about Trump that was just so shocking and so horrible.
What could it be?
Listen, the one thing that's campaigned...
He slept with his daughter?
That would do it.
Would it?
I think it probably would.
What could it be? That would be so horrible
compared
to what we already know.
Well, who knows, right? I mean, there's one thing about this campaign is that we've never say never.
He slept with Vladimir Putin.
That might do it, too.
Well, they'd say, you know, how do we know Hillary
Keep
didn't?
Speculating. I like this. This is fun.
Yeah, no.
Is it? And how do you get to Rosemary? It's R or Mayo.
Yeah. Watch the letters come in. John writes, this morning I was horrified, all capitalized, to hear Morning Edition say, now let's hear something in support of Steve Bannon. Normalizing white supremacy, I wanted to throw up. Alan, what plans does WAMC have, if any, to deal with NPR if it continues to normalize white supremacism, anti-gay and anti-Muslim hate, and other alt-right ideas? I'll be over in the corner cowering in terror while you answer.
Well, let me just say that NPR is obviously dependent and on the feds for money. They don't get it directly. It comes to us, but we give everything we get from the feds, which in this case is about $450,000 plus a lot more to support National Public Radio. We do. And I think that there can even be a sense of, without even knowing it, unconscious idea that we have to, quote, normalize or be fair. And you know what that leads to. That's what we're seeing right now. I do have great faith in Michael Oreskes, the head guy at NPR News, who I think is a superb journalist. I'm sorry, Rosemary. Go ahead.
I wanted to tell you to read, if you have not already, Kathleen Parker's article on Bannon today, and in it she has a whole section about how he looks like he slept on a grate overnight, and she says it may be shallow. Alan did this the other day and got some grief for that he looked at his appearance. She goes, you know, I suppose it is shallow. You know, to think that what a person look like matters, except that it does.
Well,
the rest of her column was very difficult for me to understand, which was, the rest of her column was, is he really a white supremacist, or is he just someone who supports the expression of white supremacist views in his publication, which to me is not a distinction that I really could see making.
Well, and that's the distinction
agree.
That he's trying to make, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's what he's saying,
correct.
Too. That's his line.
He's like a First Amendment advocate because even extreme views get expressed in his publication.
And I have to check in on this, but he is an enigmatic figure. He's hard to get a handle on because he has views all over the place. And I know BuzzFeed just put out an article of some statements that he made and a transcript of a speech that he gave. And it's hard to know where he is. A lot of it is kind of all over the place.
Yeah, he is. I mean, much of his wealth comes from Seinfeld, too, right?
That's very interesting.
Investing into Castle Rock Entertainment.
And he's a Goldman Sachs former executive. You know, Goldman Sachs, which was so horrible. As a specter in the Clinton race, I find that amazing too.
Got this letter from.
My hope is that they've. I'm sorry,
no, go
I'm
ahead.
Just going to say my hope is that the signal that was sent was okay. We know what we got here. We're going to put him in a room. He helped us win. We have to do something for him, but he is not going to have hands-on day-to-day responsibilities in the White House. Now that's my hope.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he is going to have data. I mean, his fingerprints seemed to be all over the campaign, so why wouldn't they be all over the White House, too? You know, I mean, he played a big
different.
Role in getting Trump where he is right now, so it makes sense that he would continue to play that role to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not advocating that he should. I'm just saying that I can. It, I can see why Trump would keep him in that sort of role.
Let's put it this way. I can only hope.
Judy writes on right. Ben Carson, I think his backing out wasn't humility, but possibly that he saw the disarray of the transition and doesn't want to go down with the ship.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. Certainly.
I don't believe it. They're riding high.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely, Rosemary.
Maybe he didn't want to be in the same room with a guy like Bannon. Who knows?
That could be. Yeah. Being black, he didn't want to be in with the man who is... expresses a lousy expression of white supremacy, but it is not himself a white supremacist. What?
All right. Let's go to some other topics and find out what else is happening. We do want to talk about some of the other repercussions, and that is let's talk about Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi and where they are right now. Congressional Republicans donning Make America Great Again hats on Tuesday, celebrated their impending control of government, sidestepping questions about disarray in President-elect Donald Trump's transition efforts, while Democrats struggled to unify behind their leadership after a brutal election defeat. Speaker Paul Ryan said at the news conference, "Welcome to the dawn of a new unified Republican government," holding his Make America Great Again hat in his hand. Which is a very different statement than a week and a half ago, wasn't it, when he couldn't even say his name publicly?
Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Ryan, whose nomination was unanimous, deflected questions about Mr. Trump's selection of Steve Bannon. And also, on the Democratic side, Representative Nancy Pelosi of California, or California as we say in the States, has led House Democrats since 2003, found herself facing unexpected pushback in her own reelection efforts. She postponed a vote that had been scheduled for Thursday until November 30th, yielding to the demands of members who asked for more time to reassess. The delay is likely to favor Ms. Pelosi, who
will remind
members of the money that she's raised for them over the years and consolidate her support, which runs deep, especially among the women in her caucus. But the building unease with the status quo in their ranks was clear on Tuesday, according to members.
Let's start with Pelosi if we can. And that is that, while she may not be the most popular figure in America, often in the same way they've done a job on Hillary, they've done a job on Nancy Pelosi. Nevertheless, I can tell you as somebody who runs the congressional corner and speaks to all these congressmen all the time, they love her. The ones I talk to just love her and respect her. And you know what? Nobody has put themselves forward as an alternative candidate.
There's a guy in Ohio, Alan, has come out 45 years old.
My New York Times must have been wrong this morning. But I got to tell you, I don't think there's a chance that they're going to depose Nancy Pelosi, but they may give her a rough time.
Well, you know, the party does need fresh faces, and maybe if it's not going to come from here, it's got to come from somewhere. I mean, they have no bench. They are dominated by faces that people are frankly a little tired of looking at. They need some fresh energy and something that will energize new voters. And I don't think Nancy Pelosi is the person to do it. I don't know if this – I forget the gentleman's name from Ohio, but
Tim Ryan.
Right. He's a Rust Belt guy, right?
Yes.
So it's all about the Rust Belt now.
Yeah. The only thing about the story that I find surprising is that they called it an unexpected challenge to Pelosi. Why would it be unexpected? The Democrats have done terribly for not just this last election, but two before that. And so she needs to be held accountable for that. I think new blood is needed. She's almost 80. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm an ageist. I think government work is for younger people. Yeah, almost 80. If you round up, it's 80. And
if you round down, it's 75.
Okay. Either way, she is from California, not from the middle of the country, which is where obviously the Democrats need work. I think it makes a lot of sense for her, if not to be ousted and replaced, and to at least to defend why she should remain.
Anybody?
I have an issue with that. I have an issue. As a 75-year-old, I think it was an ageist concept. And I got to tell you, there are a lot of older people, including the hero of the left, Bernie Sanders, who is my age.
Yeah, but you...
And who is now talking about... now talking about maybe running again.
But you don't want a political party where every major figure is in their 70s. I mean, that's not...
That's China.
Yes, that's China. I mean, that's not... That's, you know, that's not going to reach out to the broad spectrum of America, and you don't want a party where everyone's from the coast either, right? I mean, Nancy right. Pelosi's no. a San Franciscan, and no. Bernie's from Vermont. I mean, those are places that are part of the blue America. If you want to reach out to red America, you might want to have different voices and different perspectives.
Well, that's a point, but not the ageist part of what you just said. Because I don't believe that anybody is voting based exclusively on age. For example, Bernie did extremely well, almost won. I voted for him as well as a lot of younger people did. And there's got to be a reason for that. So I don't think it's the age specifically, but I think you make a point, Chris, about the coasts.
The AARP made had an article about how, oddly, age was not an issue at all in this election. Not just Bernie, but the candidate who won is one of the oldest we ever had. Hillary
is
was close behind.
We ever elected.
Is the oldest that we elected, right. But the problem is the baby boomers did that, and we are dying off. We're being pushed out of the way. So I do think that age makes a difference. The millennials are coming in, and they don't want, maybe it's a generational thing rather than just a certain number or a certain an age, as Bernie showed. But I think youthful people who come from a different generation will bring new vitality to the Democratic Party.
Let's take a break. We'll be back and continue with your letters and some other topics as well. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Chris Churchill on the program this morning. We welcome you. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Nice to have you with us. And let's go to some letters. Beverly writes, when Obama was running for president in 2008, he was pounded about his connection with Reverend Jeremiah Wright. I'm wondering if an equal outcry from the removal of Steve Bannon from Donald Trump's team will take place. Is the media posting Bannon's outrageous comments so all can see?
I've seen them. They're out there.
Yep.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see if Trump responds to this criticism at all, or if he just, says this is my team and I'm sticking with them.
Sherrod Brown has begun a write-in campaign, a petition drive to have him removed.
Mm-hmm.
So he's invited people to sign on to that.
Alan?
No, I just was looking at the mail too, Joe, and I see a letter here from Adam who loves us, by the way, saying that Bannon's appearance matters is the same kind of sentiment that judges people by the color of their skin. I know it was meant to be a joke, but I can see statements like that being fodder for conservative scrutiny. P.S. I love the roundtable. I don't love Bannon. There's plenty to criticize besides his appearance, and nobody's more guilty of that than I have to admit that I knew at the time I said it that there was going to be recrimination.
Well, he's a little rumpled. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I'm a little rumpled myself half the time.
Well, Susan says he dresses like that to attract and model for the white, blue-collar, Midwest, Western, NRA-toting people, men. If he was clean-cut and dressed like a Wall Streeter, he'd have no following.
Oh, my God. I hope that's not true. Yeah.
An interesting thought.
I don't think that's what Steve Bannon's about.
He's always dressed like that. He's just himself everywhere.
I mean, he's a Goldman Sachs guy. He's not.
Exactly. Do you think he dressed like that at Goldman Sachs?
That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting to know.
Yeah. We got
on Friday.
Yeah, right. Right. Rumpled Friday. James writes, with the appointment of Bannon and probably others of his ilk, should Democratic legislators and leaders boycott the inauguration? I don't think that would be in anyone's interest, would it?
I don't think I can.
I don't know. I don't think.
You don't think you can?
I don't think I can.
It would look like sore losers. That's what it would look like. And people would yell, sore loser, right?
I think so.
Or
I mean,
man of conscience, woman of conscience.
Okay. Jen writes, it's not Jen. I'm so sorry. It's William writes, new blood. How about grooming Chris Murphy? For 2020, 2024. Here we go. I've asked Chris Murphy whether he would run this time, whether he wanted to be vice president with Hillary, and he said no. But he's a terrific guy. Boy, I'd love to support somebody like that.
Anybody? No?
Nope.
Okay.
Pass. Eisenbridge. I pass.
Mike says, I honestly, after a night of tears, decided to give Trump a fair chance. I saw the response to the concession as well as the 60-minute interview as a sign he was sane. Then he appoints racists, lobbyists, and maybe his kids. My sympathy is gone already. What is the reality of Senate blocking his progress? Can we keep him at bay, or will he run amok? Well, I think those are
questions. That's a great question because I don't think you can count on people like John McCain to stay silent. The House is a dictatorship. If you don't understand that, you know, the Speaker sits there, lets things go, doesn't let things go. The House is a dictatorship, but the Senate is not. And it's always been an august body, and you have people sitting there who are waiting, just waiting to get involved. For example, you know, you have McCain, you have people like Marco Rubio, who came around in order to get elected at the end for Trump, but who basically was called Little Marco and thought he was going to be president of the United States. So when you get an opportunity on substance to say, no, Rudy Giuliani would not be good, and here's what we have discovered about Rudy Giuliani and business here or business there, that might be huge.
And Rand Paul, too, is somebody who was already wouldn't support Giuliani, wouldn't support the guy whose name is escaping me at the moment. But one other thing, it is interesting that they put Bannon in a role that didn't need confirmation, right? I mean, they intentionally did that, A, to avoid putting Republicans, making them having to cast an embarrassing vote, and B, because there might have been issues about whether or not he could be confirmed.
That's why we love to have you on the roundtable, Chris, because you tell us things which we haven't thought of.
Oh, thank you very much.
At least I didn't.
We have this from Michael, who this is a question for you, Alan. Are the state attorneys general appointed by the president? Is Preet Bharara's job in trouble?
Preet Bharara is apparently out the window. There have been leaks about that. Now, you will remember when Trump didn't think he was going to win, he came out and said he would reappoint Preet Bharara. Now we're hearing he won't reappoint Preet Bharara to continue this incredible job that he was doing. And the answer specifically to the question is yes, the President of the United States appoints the U.S. attorneys. However, it is longstanding tradition that if it is the party in power, it is the senior senator from the party in power who makes the appointment. So that would mean if the Democrats had won, it would have been Chuck Schumer. Democrats didn't win. There's no Republican in the mix in New York State. And so it will certainly be the president and his attorney general who make that choice.
So why do you think he wouldn't?
Unless, of course, they decide, right, for some reason, Preet Bharara would do something that would be helpful to them. For example, take out Andrew Cuomo. That is something that they might have been discussing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, it would make sense from that kind of Machiavellian point of view. It makes sense to keep Bharara in place just because he is tormenting Andrew Cuomo.
And if he's out of office, he's then free to run for political office, in which he might do very, very well in New York, and that would be a worse foe than
sure.
Andrew Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And remember one other thing, if I may just say this last thing, and that is that it is, of course, as I just said, the senior senator of the same party as the president. We have no such person, but we do have the minority leader of the Senate, and if he wants something from Trump, he has a lot to trade with. For example, votes on a Supreme Court nominee.
Mm. We got this letter from John who says, I guess no 100 days for Trump on WAMC, not even 100 hours. Okay, so a private citizen for 15 years, Rudy worked as a consultant for governments and makes millions of dollars. He now may be tapped for Secretary of State, and you find this disturbing?
Yes.
What I find much more disturbing is a career politician, Hillary, and her husband taking millions of dollars from foreign governments through a questionable foundation, quote-unquote. Perhaps Rudy should make a commitment not to should make a commitment not to start a foundation while Secretary of State. I also believe that Trump, like President Obama, will show much more respect for women working for him in the White House, especially interns, than Bill Clinton or Kennedy did. Please give some balance.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's really hard.
He did.
There's no.
He did, and Joe read it.
The only woman on this whole list that we've heard about is Sarah Palin. You can't treat women well in their job if you don't give them jobs to begin with. Rudy Giuliani took more money from speech making than Hillary Clinton did. Clinton lost. We don't have to defend her anymore. Her foundation is not questionable, except in the eyes of Trump and his detractors against
and
her.
And I want to say
and I hope
never
she goes back
her.
And works for him.
I mean, it'd be a different thing if Trump hadn't campaigned specifically on draining the swamp and hadn't hit Hillary again and again and again for taking monies from kind of despicable countries. If you're going to put a guy in the same role who also took money from despicable countries,
how's that draining the swamp?
Right. It's the cycle repeating.
All right. We're
I
gonna
also want to say don't put words in my mouth. I always said Hillary should not have taken that money. Always.
We're going to take a break. We will be back and continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 16th of November. Alan Chartok and Rosemary Armeo and Chris Christie. No? Chris Churchill.
That was the best line of the day.
Chris Christie was free, oddly enough, but we chose
he wandered into
Chris
the studio.
Churchill yeah. over Chris Christie.
He heard what we were saying about him and decided to drive on up.
I have a letter in my hand about Chris Christie, so I apologize.
That's all
but
right.
All right,
that's all
right. Here we go. Michael in Sparrow Bush says, I think it's perfectly appropriate and wonderfully delightful that Chris Christie got thrown under the bus the same way he threw his own staff under the bus with the Bridgegate scandal.
Wow. That's a good point. Mm-hmm.
Well, and what do you all make of that idea that take the Kushner thing out of it, that Trump was personally ticked off that he threw his staff under the bus? Did you hear that?
There was one quote. I don't know where it came from, but it's something about Trump saying he found Chris Christie disgusting or something along those lines.
Repulsive.
So, you know, who knows? I think Trump needed Chris Christie at the time when he needed him, and now he no longer needs him, so it's... Sayonara.
But he usually finds a way to get rid of people he likes and push them out of the way and then bring them back. Witness Corey Lewandowski. He didn't do that with Christie.
Mm-hmm.
It was different.
You must not like, yeah. Right.
Their relationship is complicated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Will Paul Manafort come back?
Ooh, I think he's going to be ambassador to Ukraine.
You think so? All right. Let's see. Thea writes, people are already staying away from the inauguration. I was hosting an event at a hotel just off Capitol Hill on Monday. The event salesman told me they normally would have sold out for inauguration, but they are not.
I think fear of some trouble could be part of it as well. You know, my sisters and I are interested in the Million Woman March the day after. And the number one issue that we hear when we try to recruit people to come with us is, will it be safe?
Well, Suzanne Ansarides wants to know about that. Is the panel aware of the Women's March on Washington, which we talked
very
about
aware.
For a week? Very mm-hmm. aware. And plan for...
Yeah, we've never talked about that before, right?
And if you...
we talk about it all the time.
And if you just Google it, you can find out more information. Yeah, I know, Alan.
I don't think people are as wrapped in attention about what we say as we are ourselves.
No, I think it's a different story. I think what happens is people don't listen all the time. And so we get these letters that say, you never have talked about this. And are you aware of this? Well, you know, if you were listening, you would know that we constantly talked about the March on Washington. So,
oh, Professor, you sound like you're talking to your class. If you had done the reading... I recognize
right.
that tone.
Mark says, I wonder this. This is for you, Alan. If WAMC gets $450K from the feds, Will that continue with Trump, or is the fear that he will pull funding and you all could be less well off, question mark, that does this affect your views and color your spin on political discussions?
Well, it may. I'm going to answer now. I'm going to say it may, in fact, affect NPR. I know it doesn't affect WAMC, as you are hearing, if people have ears, and if you've done the reading. It doesn't affect us. But I'm about to say something which may be shocking. I have no question that if we do the right thing and we're objective as we can be, and we continue to do what we're doing on the roundtable, that even if we lose $450,000, our 400,000 monthly listeners will make it up. In other words, WAMC will survive. Now, the question then becomes, will anybody else survive, or how many will? Well, at WNYC, I'm assuming, will be San Francisco, will be Los Angeles, will be. But there are a lot of public radio stations which live primarily on the bit that they get from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and they could be in a lot of trouble.
It's one of the anthems of Clinton supporters who are disappointed that instead of just moaning and groaning, they go out and support causes they care about. NPR is one of them. Another one is Planned Parenthood, which has, I love this, like $25,000 in donations from Mike Pence. People are sending in money in the name of Mike Pence. Yeah. So I do think that there's hope for public support of NPR should indeed its funding be threatened.
Carol,
I will point out one thing, and I'm sorry, one thing real fast, and that is I just recently wrote a letter to all my NPR colleagues talking about certain things. And one person, and mentioning the fact that NPR could be in real trouble here. And then I got a letter from somebody saying that Mike Pence had been voted Hero of the Year by the PBS station in Indiana. So there, you know, wow. We're in fine shape. Oh, yeah? Let's see.
Is that true? For what actions was he awarded?
I have
that?
No idea. I have no. Well, because he came out to a dinner or something. I don't know. You do that. They flatter governors. They flatter others, and they give them. I knew a state legislator who once told me he was in charge of the education committee in the state assembly a long time ago, and he said, "I do not have any more room on my wall for another plaque honoring me for my dedication to education." That's the way it's done.
We also have this letter. This is also in regards to NPR, and it's from Carol. And she said, I heard the brief discussion about NPR and Morning Edition. Morning Edition, question mark, please. How I would love to hear the WAMC and a whole slew of other public radio stations dump that show. Ever since Steve Inskeep insisted in his op-ed that the U.S. is center-right, merging the top percentile of voters, independents, with the lowest, conservative, bespeaks of his lack of intellectual integrity. And during the campaign, they invited members of the entire right-wing bench and a centrist to discuss Monday politics. Enough. Well, I think they were trying to keep it.
Well,
I think they were trying to be fair. I mean, are these? You can't ignore it. You can't ignore 50% of the country.
After all, he won.
Did Trump win, but Republicans are in control of most of the states out there too. I mean, Morning Edition has a national audience.
Right. By the way,
right.
This
and
just
also
go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry, Jeff. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say that if you take a look at our metrics, if that's the right word, you will find that Morning Edition is still our most popular program.
Absolutely.
By far.
Dateline, February 24th, 2014. The Association of Public Television Stations presented its Champion of Public Broadcasting Award to Governor Mike Pence. The Champion of Public Broadcasting Award is given to political leaders and other individuals who safeguard the ability of local public television stations to provide educational, public safety, and civic engagement services to their communities. Governor Pence is a highly respected conservative who jealously guards taxpayers' interests, believes deeply in limited government, values the public service mission of public television and public broadcasting, and has recommended an investment of state funds in support of that mission in Indiana.
Wow.
All right.
Well, yes, and he wants. Yeah, I don't think there's any question that he wants to be well treated by, you know, by public radio. Let me just say one thing about this, Joe, and that is that we know that the American people are divided, and some people listen to you know, right wing radio. And I think it's fair to say that people who think listen to National Public Radio and to places like WAMC. You ran for president, and you went after the intelligentsia. So it makes sense, does it not, that, and I hope I'm wrong, but I think I'm right, that in fact you don't do anything to help NPR. And when the Corporation of Public Broadcasting allocation comes up, I fear for what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't mean to ask this, but I will ask this. So the worst case scenario in your mind being?
The worst case scenario being that we stop being dependent in any way on the federal government, which has its downsides.
Right.
And we come to the people who are listening to the radio and say, if you want it, we've got to support it. And let me tell you, we will. There's no doubt in my mind, we will.
Couldn't there be an upside to that, too? I mean, you wouldn't have to – your independence would no longer be questioned in a certain sense. And
And
there's probably a segment of the population that doesn't give, listens but doesn't give, because they think, well, I'm already supporting that with my tax money. So maybe those people will become more likely to give.
And the government would have to stop making threats.
They wouldn't have this axe to hang over your head.
So there's a 10% of our budget. It's about a $700,000 budget, of which approaching $1 million, folks, goes to support NPR. And I don't want to get into it on the air here, but I'm telling you, they keep asking for more and more and more and more. So, and I'm telling you now that we, with all of the listeners we have, including what you just said, those who write me letters and say, Alan, I don't have to give you anything because my tax dollars go. Yeah, well, a tiny portion of that $700,000 comes from the feds. Anybody can make up anything they want, but that's the answer.
Let's go to our own Barbara Smith, who will be with us on Friday. She just wanted to make this clarification because it came up in one of the letters about making the connection of Steve Bannon to Trump as Reverend Wright to President Obama, and say when he ran the first time, Obama was pushed to sever ties with Reverend Wright because of racism. Bannon will not be pushed out despite his views because of unspoken as well as explicit racism. And that's from our own Barbara Smith, who I'm sure will have much more to say on that on Friday as well. Samantha says, I think the Democrats need to keep strong, smart women in prominent places to push back on the blatant misogyny of the Trump Republicans. If not Nancy Pelosi in that position, they should consider another woman rep.
Agree, but
yeah.
I was outvoted, so.
What was the name of the lady in California? She runs a think tank now. She was a congresswoman, and she got into a terrible fight with Pelosi. We know there was real bad blood. Does anybody remember who that was? Yeah. It was not pretty. It was not pretty. Thought I would just raise it.
What, the specter of a cat fight?
No. No, but the fact that even women can disagree with each other. Women can, men can,
even women, especially women. Yeah, we are our own worst enemy, as this election again proved.
Samantha said, I read that one. There it is. Stacey, I'm sorry. As it happens, had a very interesting interview with a man from Indiana who voted for Trump because Trump promised to keep running in Indiana, the plant he worked for 16 years since graduating from high school, and which is moving to Mexico. He acknowledged not being optimistic that Trump would come through with that, but he's desperate and thought it was worth his vote. We have to address this contingent of our population who have been suffering without attention for years. Should have been Bernie. ..
Yeah, that's the carrier plant that Trump has promised to keep operating, and that'll be a test whether or not he can actually do that. There are a lot of people there who are really counting on him to come through on that promise.
Right.
But on the other hand, how does a president do that? I mean, he's not a king, he's not a dictator, he can't really tell private companies what they can and cannot do. So it's kind of an interesting
point
scenario.
Not made in any of his campaign speeches, of mm-hmm, course. He did come across as, I will save you. Only I can help you.
Right.
So the workers are looking for help.
That's the authoritarian streak that worries a lot of people on the right too, who have always pushed back against this idea of an imperial president and this, you know, this all-consuming control in Washington.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, because I love this article so much. The title being "Political Divide Splits Relationships and Thanksgiving Too." the election is over, but the repercussions in people's lives may be just beginning as families across the United States contemplate uncomfortable holidays or are already deciding to bypass them, and relationships among friends, relatives, and spouses are tested across the political divide. Matthew Horn, a software engineer from Boulder, Colorado, canceled Christmas plans with his family in Texas. Nancy Sundin, a social worker in Spokane, Washington, has called off Thanksgiving with her mom and brother. Ruth Durancy, a software engineer in Chicago, decided to move her wedding so that her fiancé's grandmother and aunt, strong Trump supporters from Florida, could not attend. Democrats have dug in their heels and in some cases are refusing to sit across the table from relatives who voted for President-elect Donald Trump, a man they say stands for nasty things they abhor. Many who voted for Mr. Trump say it is the liberals who are to blame for discord unfairly tarring them with the odious label of racist just because they voted for someone else. And so this is an article in the New York Times. It's very it's very funny, but it's also kind of sad. So the question is, how do you keep these relations intact? And how do you get through the holidays, which are usually already hard enough as it is?
I like to think of this as only you wouldn't have had to go into all of that, Joe. All you had to do is say, what about Uncle Harry?
Right. That's right. What about Uncle Harry?
Everybody has a Uncle Harry, and everybody's going to say, oh, my God.
But I do have to say, you know, even friendships, I mean, it is different now. I mean, you know, you don't, because you look at people differently, right? I mean, it's.
Yep.
Well, Rich Honan said to us the other day, right, that he had lost a very good friend over this issue, a very, very, very close friend because of this political difference.
Yeah, and I think that's I think a lot of, you know, you sort of test the waters, right, when you go into a conversation, right?
At the very best, what you get now is, okay, we're not going to talk about politics. The day after the election, I was supposed to pick up a key from a friend whose dog I was babysitting from, and I go, I can't come over today. I just can't face your husband. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. I wouldn't let him say anything. And that conversation has been repeated over and over. My sisters and I have changed Thanksgiving plans because we don't want to be around relatives who think differently. We don't even want to see him smile. Sorry.
It's
too raw.
This is a dangerous trend, though, and this has been happening for a long time, where people are just completely intolerant of opinion that's not their own. I mean, you've seen it actually in some of the letters where people don't want to hear Republicans on certain radio programs. I mean,
on this show,
you have an obligation. You have an obligation to listen. I mean, if we continue,
but not at Thanksgiving. I don't have an obligation to listen to it at Thanksgiving dinner in my own home.
Why not? Why is Thanksgiving any different than any other time?
Because I want to be comfortable there. I want to be able to express my own opinion without an uncle, for example.
But why Uncle Harry?
A hypothetical uncle raising his voice at the mention of
that's
Hillary
the problem,
Clinton's
though.
Name.
The idea that these things can't be discussed without everybody starting to yell
right
is part
now
of the
they
problem.
Can't, Chris. They can't. Well, I mean, there's a cool down period when you have a fight in media. You don't put the people together right afterward and say, get over it. And I think the discussion needs to come. But it doesn't need to come right now, less than a month after the election.
Well, the other problem here is that these things have long-lasting repercussions, Rosemary. So that, family feuds that have been, you know, going on for 1,000 years can come out of one Thanksgiving dinner and what that woman said to me. So I know a family, I do. I know a family where somebody came into the cemetery when the grandmother was being buried, right? And they took somebody else's flowers from the grave and put them on as if they were their own. And this fight has lasted for generations. So you can understand why this is such a serious issue. Who stole the flowers off Bubba's grave?
Yeah.
Two sides.
Obviously, it was Uncle Harry. Clearly. Chris, did you want to say more on that?
I don't know. I
I don't know. I don't know.
Top
what I want to
that
say.
One.
Yeah. I mean, you do have to listen to the other side and at least try to understand where people are coming from.
You don't have to break bread with them.
Brucey says,
we're members of your family. Yes, you do. That's what family is.
We're managing to avoid that, Chris.
All right, we are out of time, and I thank everybody who. What? Oh,
well,
you're just surprised that it's out of time. Yeah, I'm sorry. We're out of time, but we'll be back tomorrow with more paneling, and we'll talk then. In the meantime, the roundtable will continue after the short break.